tender commandments today. Presently, our culture, in our culture, agenda is more important than truth. Now, we're about to have a really good example of that because we're in an election season. And so often we realize that one person will tell a lie about another person if it will help their agenda. Agenda is more important than truth. The media will forward a story that's not entirely true or not tell the whole truth if it will forward someone's agenda. Agenda is more important than truth. So people's reputations and their character are destroyed over someone else's agenda. I don't know if you remember, I was younger at the time when it happened, but it stuck with me for some reason. The whole issue with Clarence Thomas, if you remember that whole scene in the American landscape, it looked like to me, and I don't know, maybe I wasn't aware enough to know all the issues, but it looked like to me that there were a group that came after him. And it looked like to me in the process of all the trials and all the raking his family over the coals, it looked like to me agenda was more important than truth. That's how it appeared, if you remember that whole scene. So what happens when agenda is more important than truth? Well, you see reality talk shows and reality TV, talk radio, Facebook, information pulses and surges today at the speed of light, with absolutely no consequences. Just keep jamming the information out. Or are there consequences? Maybe there are consequences that are sort of invisible so we haven't noticed them. You know, the days of closing a deal with a handshake are just about over. A person's word is their bond. We talk now about stretching the truth and exaggeration and white lies, and contracts have to be signed and you've got to read the small print. And if you really want to get depressed about the state of humanity, why don't you just dial in the afternoon and watch one of the reality courtroom shows? Judge Judy or Judge Mathis or Judge Joe Brown. I started to look up last night, how many courtroom reality shows are there? And the pages just went by and I thought, wow, we're fascinated with reality and a search for truth, aren't we? Exodus chapter 20, verse 16 says, "You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor." You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. What does this command mean? You and I live in a world of very sophisticated communication. The problem is the more complicated things become, the higher the likelihood is that we lose our grasp on simple truths. The more complicated things become, the more likely it is that simple truths are lost. So what does "do not lie about your neighbor" mean? I think the best way for us to understand it this morning is how we would apply it. If we can think about how we would apply this commandment, then maybe it would be clearer for us to understand what it means. At its core, lying, because we all sort of learn in our culture, we've sort of thrown the word lying out because it's an ugly word and we don't often admit to it. But lying at its core root is deceitfulness. Think this morning about lying not as in telling something that's flat out untrue. Think about the core inner nature of lying as deceitfulness. So it's either when the content, which is what we usually focus on, the content or the method of communication is deceitful. So this morning what I thought I would do to help understand this commandment is let's look at ways that deceitfulness can happen. And as we do, we'll gain an understanding of this commandment. Do not give false testimony against your neighbor. If you're taking notes, I'll give you four of them. Here's the first one. The first way I think that we operate or participate or experience deceitfulness is in spreading rumors. Somebody will say to you, "Now, I wouldn't tell this to you if it wasn't true." I actually had a lady tell me this one time. You're not going to believe me. You're going to think I'm giving a false testimony. I actually had a lady on the phone one day call me and say, I heard this. I said, how do you know this is true? I heard this from a person who heard it straight from the horse's mouth. I went, oh. I said, so you're telling me it's gossip. I didn't say that. Well, I said it. Don't tell anybody I told you, but what happens when a rumor circulates a little while is it ultimately takes on a life of its own. There's a story, I don't know if it's true or not, but there's a story about a lady who lived in a small town who thought it was her job to spread some hot gossip through that little city. And she had found out something about the local principal at the high school. And so she decided that everybody else in town really needed to know, and it was her obligation to tell everybody. And so later on, she found out in her adventure that what she had come to believe to be true and told way too many people, and they had told people, wasn't true at all. And so in a moment of clarity and utter brokenness and repentance, she went over to the principal's house and knocked on the door and said, look, I'm the one that started this and told everybody about it, and I'm sorry. And he said, you know what? I appreciate you coming, and I forgive you. There's only one thing, though, if you could do something for me. She said, sure, what is it? He said, if you would take a feather pillow and you would go up on the high point of the city, and you would tear it open on one end, and you would wave it into the wind until all those feathers jump up in the wind and blow all over the town. He said, and then if you would go and try to retrieve every one of those feathers, that would be like trying to undo the damage that you did by what you told about me. You know what I like about that story? It tells us something we don't often hear anymore. There are some things, once they are done, they are not undone or easily undone. Sometimes it's impossible to take back words once they've been spoken. So one of the ways that I think that we participate in deceitfulness is in spreading rumors. Whoever said sticks and stones may break my bones didn't tell the truth. Words do hurt more than sticks and stones. You know how you can stop a rumor, though? When someone tells you one, you say, okay, who are we talking about? All right. When I go and tell them this story, can I quote you? What? You'll find they won't call you anymore. Can I put your name on this? No. Because, listen, deceit wants to remain in the shadows. But if you bring it into the light, the shadows melt away. No, let me run back here and hide where it's comfortable. I want to remain anonymous. That's what deceit is. It is misguiding and misdirecting while remaining anonymous. There's an interesting story about a widow who was the town gossip. And she had a tongue longer than the line at the tag renewal office last week in Alabaster. She would tell stories about people, and there was a handyman named George who lived in this town who drove a beat-up old truck. And she saw that truck parked out in front of the local bar. And she saw him at church one Sunday, and she put her bony little finger in his face and said, I just want you to know, George, I want you to know that people have seen your truck in front of that old bar, and people are talking. People are talking. Anonymous people are talking. Guess who it might be? Anonymous people. And they're talking. And I just want you to know you have no business being there. You shouldn't be in a place like that, and it's going to hurt your reputation. And by the way, we all thought you were alcoholic anyway. Now we know you have trouble with alcohol. What's wrong with you? And she never gave old George a chance, who was a quiet, passive guy. She never gave him a chance to explain that he had been hired by the bar owner to do some repair work inside the building. And so what he thought he would do is he thought he would see if he couldn't remedy the situation. So later that night, he drove his old beat-up truck over and drove it and put it in her driveway and then left it there all night and walked home. You know, there's different ways to fix things, aren't there? Spreading rumors is a path of deceitfulness. Here's the second one. By innuendo. By innuendo. What is innuendo? Innuendo means to nod. To nod. Just point that direction. These are the people who spill out some kind of information they weren't supposed to. They say, oh, I was just joking. I was just joking. I mean, it was a joke. I didn't even mean it, but it's too late. The information's out there. There are indirect references that sound like this. I knew a person that had the habit of this. Now, I'm not saying this. That was a big cue for, that's exactly what I'm saying. But you can't hold me accountable for it because I said before I said it, I'm not saying it. Now, I'm not saying this is true. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying this, but, well, you're planting the seed of the idea in another person's mind, and you're letting it take root. The innuendo insulates the speaker from accountability because they say, no, somebody calls them, and they say, I never said that. And then, did you ever hear me say, oh, no, he said he wasn't saying that. Well, you said it, didn't you? It's exactly what you said. And the other person can verify it because you preface it with that statement. They might not have said it, but they said it. It's kind of like that idea of Bill Clinton on the jury, in the courtroom saying, what do you mean by is? Innuendo. I never said that. It's kind of like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. Innuendo is a quiet discord. It's a roll of the eyes. It's a nod of the head. It's a suggestion. It's a hint towards something. It's when somebody asks you, hey, what do you think about old so-and-so? Oh, man, he's a great guy. Then somebody says, did you say he was a bad guy? No, I said he was a great guy. I said he was great. It's deceitful. It's innuendo. When you use tactics like that and shift the conversation, leaving yourself out by saying, I didn't say all that. You know, when I was 16 years old, I hadn't been saved long, and I hadn't been in that local church I was in maybe a year or so. And I decided, for some idiotic reason, I was going to play a joke on my pastor. Do you see the dark clouds gathering? And what I decided I would do, I just thought it was funny. I don't know why. Here's how it happens. This is how it happens with most teenage young men. You find something you didn't expect to find, and then you say, what could we do with this? I found a for sale sign somewhere. I don't remember where I got it. And I thought, you got to do something with this. You don't run up on a for sale sign every day. So my pastor happened to be out of town on vacation, but he was preaching at another church, so I decided it might be funny to put a for sale sign in his yard. And he lived on a major four-lane road there not far from our church, and I thought there might be a lot of people that would see it. And so somebody said to me, people are going to start rumors about this. And I said, because I'd been saved all of a year, I already figured all this out. Well, it's their fault they shouldn't be gossiping then. They get caught gossiping, they get caught with their hand in the cookie jar. Stabbed it in there. And it caused, my poor pastor's in heaven now, probably prematurely. And it caused that poor man trouble. Trouble, 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 trouble. And he had to come back home to church the next Sunday. And he had to stand from the pulpit and explain to everybody, I'm not moving. My house isn't for sale, I promise. I don't know who put that there. And trust me, to the day he died, he never found out who put that there. I'm going to tell you, I sat back there about the third pew and I just kind of sunk down. I went, oh. I thought, I wonder if they can see it on my face, you know. I thought, yay, pastor's staying, that's good. We're glad about that. Can I tell you, when I saw the damage that was done, I realized that although I didn't intend to, I started a rumor. An innuendo is more powerful sometimes than what a person actually says, just suggesting and planting the seed in the wrong direction. And it's deceitful. Here's the third one. In this one, you may not see coming. Judging someone's motives. You may know what I do, but you'll never know why I did it. You may know what someone else does, but you'll never know why they did it. How can you tell someone else's heart when you can't even completely understand your own heart? Jeremiah says the heart above all things is most deceitful. Who can understand it? But yet we claim, don't you find that most often when we're thinking about other people, we think with our head, and when we think about ourselves, we use our heart? Oh, but you don't understand what I was feeling. But with them you go, did you see what they did? And it's razor edge, judgment. Stephen Covey, who wrote The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, tells a very profound story that happened to him. He was on the subway traveling, and a dad came in with several young children, and those children were running all over the subway, causing chaos, frustrating people. You could see everybody trying to avoid them and try to figure out. And all these scenarios started going through his mind. He says, why won't the dad do something? Doesn't he see what's going on? Doesn't he see how rude this is and how the kids are all over the subway? Why doesn't he do something? Then he started to think, this guy's a bad father. Look at him. He's just ignoring him. He's a bad father. And so finally, irritated up to here, he finally said something to him. He said, hey, can't you see what your kids are doing in this subway compartment, irritating everybody? Why don't you say something to them? They're out of control. And the man looked at him and he said, we're just on our way from the hospital, and their mother passed away this morning. And he said, and I don't really know how to handle it, and I guess they don't either. You may know what somebody does, but you'll probably never know why they do it. And judging someone's motives and turning that judgment into an attitude that communicates to other people is bearing false witness. It is deceitfulness. And it gets down to the core of where we live. When we size people up and move to snap judgments about the motivations of their heart, and you know what? In the rare occasions that we're actually right, what good does it do? When do you or I ever judge someone's motive and we give them the judge them up? You know, we usually rate them down. I'll tell you, I'm always nervous when somebody rushes, I'll tell you why they did it. Okay. Somebody with an angelic x-ray machine that views the heart. I'll tell you why they did it. Okay. Here's the last one. Telling part of the truth. Now this is a slick one. Telling part of the truth. Here's what this means. If I allow you to leave a conversation believing something that I know is not true, then I deceived you. I led you into deceit. In other words, even if I use the truth I told the truth. I can't help it that they misunderstood. Well, did you try? Did you try to explain it or did you hide behind that? Even if you can even use the truth in a deceitful way. How do you mean that? Exactly what does that mean? If either I tell you part of the truth or tell the truth to you in a way that leads you to believe something that is not true, I can use the truth to mislead you. Remember I said, if the content or the method of communication, then it's still deceitfulness. Genesis chapter 3, the Bible gives us a scene where darkness is thick and evil is real, and the serpent comes to Adam and to Eve, and he says, look, did God really say that you can't eat from that tree? Eve says, yes. He said, we couldn't eat from that fruit, touch it. We can't even look at it, which wasn't true. We can't even look at it or we'll die. Satan says, you're not going to die. Listen to how deceit works. You're not going to die. If you eat that fruit, you're not going to die. And he starts to question God's character. God's lying to you. God told you you'd die. You're not going to die. God's a liar. So he's undermining and questioning. God doesn't want you to eat it. Listen, the enemy says, I'll tell you why God said it. I'll judge God's motive. See how we get in trouble? He says, God doesn't want you to eat it because he knows if you do, your eyes are going to be open and you're going to be like God and you're going to know good from evil. So he first judged God's character and then he judged God's motive. God's a liar and God's insecure and God is selfish and God doesn't want you to be as strong and as incredible as he is. He's not looking out for you, he's looking out for himself. Now here's the deceitfulness in it. As with all good lies, it had just enough truth in it to trick them. Actually, the one thing that Satan told the truth about was, is that your eyes will be open. And you will know good from evil. Before, they only knew good. And he said, your eyes are going to be open, and after this, you're going to know good from evil. And they had only lived in pure innocence, knowing only good. The beginning of lying is first believing a lie. Adam and Eve never lied to God until they believed somebody else's lie. Then they started to lie. Deceitfulness starts with believing something that's untrue, and then it works its way out of you. That's where deceitfulness begins. Adam and Eve first believed the lie of the serpent. Then they did what we always do when we believe a lie. We start to deceive ourselves. Then they went and ran and hid behind a false covering. Remember what I said deceit wants? It wants shadows. It wants the darkness. It wants to hide. It doesn't want to come out in the light. So they went and hid in the bushes. And here's what they did. Watch this. They hid behind a false covering. Deceit is always a false covering. It's a fake covering. They believed a lie, then they lied, and that lying led to murder. That lie set in motion the destructive force of evil that would work its way into their two sons and cause one of them to kill the other one. And it's the same course. Satan has many roads, but all his roads lead to one place, destruction. The enemy came to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And that's where the path of deceitfulness leads. John chapter 8, 44, Jesus was talking to the Pharisees. He said, you belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language. Isn't that a powerful phrase? The enemy has a native language. It's lying. His native tongue is deceit, for he is a liar and the father of lies. I'm going to ask our worship team to come now. What's the essence of do not lie against your neighbor? The essence of it is to deceive is to reach for something we don't have. In essence, it is to steal. To deceive is to reach for something that we don't have. Think about, generally deception comes from a person who feels rejected. The more unloved I feel, the more rejected I am, the greater my tendency is to deceive. If you've ever known anyone that's a habitual liar, I promise you, they have suffered some form of neglect in their life. Some form of neglect. And they are reaching for something they should have had, and they didn't get it. So they're deceiving and deceiving and deceiving. Generally, when we deceive, we're reaching for acceptance. That's what we want. So many times our self-esteem is wrapped up inside of the stories or the gossip or the rumor or the deceit or the misleading. Our self-esteem is wrapped up in it. That's why people who are deceptive are oftentimes defensive of their deception. Because when you challenge their deception, the way they receive that is you're rejecting them. You're not rejecting their story. You're not rejecting what they're telling. You're not rejecting the information. You're rejecting their self-esteem. You're rejecting them. That's how they feel. Because they've connected their self-value with the stories they tell because they're reaching for something. They're reaching to try to get something. So when you reject the story, you reject them. Most of our deceitfulness comes from an attempt to protect ourselves. We tell a little white lie to protect our image, to protect our value, to protect our self-esteem. Oh, no, no, I don't want them to think that of me. I don't want them to think bad of me. I'll just tell them I was here when maybe I was really there. Because we're trying to protect. What the real essence of do not bear false witness against your neighbor is I don't believe God. Because let me tell you what God says. God says you're not rejected, you're accepted. God says you're not unloved, you're loved. God says, I know the plan I have for you, it's to give you a future and a hope. And when you don't believe God, then you find yourself fending for yourself, wrapped in shades of deception. And the truth is, if you could graph that out, that process is true in all of our lives to one degree or another. It's not that there are liars and there are not liars. It's that there's only one truth teller, and he's God. And the Bible says, let every man be a liar. And God's the truth teller. And as we come to Him, as we are, and accept Him as He is, those shades, those layers of deception start to fall off. And He emerges us out of our lost, destructive life. And the Bible says His truth sets us free. His truth sets us free. Why did God put this command in the Ten Commandments? Because deceit destroys relationship. You cannot have a good... Think about your marriage. Think about with your family. Think about with your co-workers. Think about with your friends. You cannot have a good relationship where there's no trust. If there's deceit, if there's lying, if there's a lack of reality, the foundation's gone. So why did God put this command here? He put it here to tell us that there is truth and to turn our hearts toward searching for it. Because it's not in us, it's in Him. And as we turn our mind and our heart toward Him and search, God put this commandment in here because He wants a relationship with us. More than anything else, He wants a relationship with us. But the only way to have a relationship with us is on the foundation of truth. And God is truth. Would you stand with me this morning?